You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
The service will be a little bit different today. I won't do a separate reading and we won't do candles of joy and concern. And it's because I really wanted the time for the Sunday Club. I think they have done an absolutely wonderful job this year. So without further ado, let's move into the Sunday Club presentation.
Hi everyone, it's a long time since I've been in the church here with you all and it's lovely for us to be here. This year, the Sunday Club presentation is a bit different with our requirements of no singing, dancing, interacting, etc. So we've done a bit of a reflective presentation about the year where we've all contributed from afar to make something together. We just wanted to stay with the theme of this year, which I'm sure we've all experienced technical difficulties many times throughout the year. So I hope you enjoy it. I now invite Savannah and Spencer to start the children's part of the presentation.
Good morning, everyone. This year has been one where we really had to come together while being apart.
This year, we think everyone around the world has worked together to face the unexpected challenges that have arisen by giving each other the gifts of our seven principles.
The Sunday Club children would now present the slides that we have prepared about each of the principles.
The slides explain how humanity is drawn on each principle to respond to challenges and to look after one another.
To start with, James will read Curry's contribution.
Curry can't be here today, so I'm going to read the message he and his family wrote about people around the world celebrating everyone being important. Curry wrote, "Every person is important because we are all the same, but we just look different. My family have been working with people with disabilities because they matter just like everyone else. Some people in the wider world have learnt that even if you have a different skin colour, we all need to be treated the same. This year, new emojis have been released that show people with disabilities.
This year, we have had a big list of opportunities to be kind. For example, we have been kind to animals who depend on us to care for them. We have cared for our extended family and they have cared for us. Parents kindly and unexpectedly spent more time teaching their children, and their children unexpectedly paid attention to their parents teaching them. We enjoyed spending time with our grandma, who has kindly been looked after by aged care staff even when COVID rules kept changing.
We also appreciate the kindness of people from the Unitarian Church.
This year, sometimes we couldn't go to the normal places we go to learn and see our friends, like school playgrounds and Sunday Club. Zoom was one way we kept learning together. At Sunday Club, we did lots of Zoom sessions where we could talk to each other and do fun things like treasure hunts, yoga, meditation, sign language, stories, dancing. It was lots of fun. We are thankful that we are still free to learn together. A special thank you to David Friesmith and all the people involved in Sunday Club for keeping us learning together. My picture shows the Sunday Club kids having a Zoom session.
Our principle is search for what is true. This year, we had to learn how to not get COVID-19 and to not give it to others. We had to learn how to use Zoom and WebEx apps so that we could communicate with other people. We used these at school and also for Sunday Club. Scientists had to learn how to make a vaccine for COVID-19 from nothing, and they have been working on one for almost a whole year. The government had to learn from scientists about how to keep everyone in the world safe from COVID-19.
In 2020, people all around the world fought to give everyone a voice. For example, the Black Lives Matter movement. Sometimes Aboriginal Australians and African Americans and others around the world do not have the chance to be heard. This year, people in the Black Lives Matter movement spoke so loudly so that everyone can have a voice. Greta Thunberg keeps speaking up for the environment. One of her important messages is that change is coming, whether you like it or not. The real power belongs to the people. Sometimes Principle 7 interacts with Principle 5 because people use their voice to speak up for the environment. Thinking about it, actually, Principle 5 interacts with almost all the principles because people use their voice for lots of different things.
This year, people have worked towards having a fair and peaceful world during COVID by washing their hands, doing elbow taps instead of handshakes, wearing masks, and staying home when they're sick, so people can be as free as possible to do the work they need to do. People have also tried to make a vaccine that everyone can access. My Lego sculpture has building blocks with the words fair, nice, peaceful, justice on them. We have a sculpture of the whale shaped like a trophy on top. It shows that if everyone is fair and peaceful, and if there's justice for everyone, then we all win the trophy of the world. Building with fairness and peace supports the world and helps it to survive.
There are many ways that people around the world work to look after the environment. This year, the kids from Sunday Club have taken some specific steps. We have helped take care of the community garden with Jenny. We have done lots of camping and made sure to dispose of our rubbish safely. We have been on many hikes while protecting the natural environment around us. And we have discussed water and its importance. We hope you help the environment. As I take shorter showers every day, so I help the environment. Thank you.
Thank you for listening, everyone. I wonder how we will use our 7 principles next year.
I can't wait to find out. We have enjoyed preparing this presentation this week.
Thank you to Kate and David for getting us all coordinated.
This year, we've still managed to have lots of fun activities in Sunday Club.
Thank you to the various guests who have helped throughout the year in Sunday Club.
We hope your friends and your family will have a lovely Christmas.
We would like to finish this presentation today by showing a few photos from our year's Sunday Club activities. And please enjoy.
Thank you very much, everybody. As some of you might know, I'm an English teacher, and one of my Year 9s for their presentation, they had a topic they had to do the greatest of all time. And lots of the boys just did basketballers and so on. But one young lady said, I think the greatest thing of all time is humanity's compassion. And many of the slides you saw at the start of this presentation were from the work she did for that oral presentation, and it inspired all the teachers at Henley High. And I hope it's inspired you guys to realise that really in this storm that we're in, with humanity's compassion, that still some wonderful things can grow and develop as we've seen our children grow and develop this year. So thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Sunday Club. I think you can stay where you are for the children's story. We haven't got a slideshow. Adults will have to do what they did back in my day when you listened to the stories on the radio and you used your imaginations. Like being a bit more open for Christmas than most parts of the world. As I speak, South Australians of German descent are rolling out honey biscuits. The German bakery at Harndorf started baking Stollen on Thursday. A bit late this year, but it's happening. We haven't thrown cautions to the winds, however. The annual Christkindlmarkt at Harndorf has been cancelled. It's nice here that we're back to not needing to book. We're allowed 59 in this worship space. As our restrictions are easing a bit, the opposite is happening in Germany. This week, Samantha Hawley, the ABC's bureau chief in Europe, published an article with this header. Germans flock to shops to get their Christmas shopping done. Now it's forced them into lockdown for the holiday. And she writes, Bratwurst in a bun, washed down with mulled wine. A brass band, a gingerbread man, and a spot of Christmas shopping under the stars. For hundreds of years, German Christmas markets have symbolised the joy and happiness of the festive season, and millions of tourists flock there every year to have a taste of it. 5 million tourists alone go to Cologne every year, and that's only one of seven huge markets. But this year, the outdoor market tradition that began in the early 1300s will sit idle without a fairy light to be seen. You can see that the mood is very low, Jürgen Amann, the head of Cologne Tourism, told the ABC. People are fed up with the situation. Germany, once seen as a European leader in the fight against COVID-19, has faltered, and less than 10 days out from Christmas will be locked down again. A spot of Christmas shopping isn't even on the cards. What went wrong? The country has set new records in the number of confirmed cases and deaths in recent weeks. According to Ralph Hertwig, a professor in psychology from the Leopoldina Academy of Sciences, every 3 minutes, one German is dying of COVID-19. Professor Hertwig believes the surge in cases is a consequence of a number of factors, including a growing complacency among a fatigued population and mixed messages from politicians who believed a partial or soft crackdown would be enough. Over the Christmas period, one household will be able to invite a maximum of 4 close family members from other households. I would have wished for lighter measures, but due to Christmas shopping, the number of social contacts has risen considerably, Chancellor Angela Merkel told journalists on Sunday following a meeting with leaders of the country's 16 federal states. They will have a broad impact on the many, many people. We are aware of that. But they will have an effect to stop our health system from being overwhelmed. Don't you love translations from German? I guess you could say, though, that in many parts of the world, including Germany, Christmas has been banned. Good grief, has that ever happened before? Well, the Grinch in me smiles with glee. Yes, it has happened before. Not just diminished like it was in wartime, but actually banned. Back in 1647, Christmas was banned in the kingdoms of England, which at that time included Wales, Scotland and Ireland, and it didn't work out very well. Following a total ban on everything festive, from decorations to gatherings, rebellions broke out all over the country. While some activity took the form of just hanging a bit of holly in defiance, other action was far more radical and went on to have historical consequences. In 1647, Parliament had won the Civil War in England, Scotland, Ireland. King Charles was held in captivity in Hampton Court. The Church of England had been abolished and replaced with the Presbyterian system. The Protestant Reformation had restructured churches across the British Isles, and holy days, Christmas included, were abolished. Shops had to stay open right through Christmastide, including Christmas Day. Displays of decorations, holly, ivy and other evergreens were banned. Other traditions, such as feasting and celebratory consumption of alcohol, consumed in large quantities then as now, were likewise restricted. Christmas Day, though, didn't pass quietly. People across England, Scotland and Ireland flouted the rules. In Norwich, the mayor had already been presented with a petition calling for a celebration of a traditional Christmas. He couldn't, of course, allow it publicly, but he ignored the illegal celebrations across the city. In Canterbury, the usual football match happened, and festive holly bushes stood outside house doors. Over the 12 days of Christmas, the partying spread across all of Kent, and armed forces had to be used to break up the fun. Christmas Day was celebrated in the very heart of Westminster, and the church wardens were arrested for not stopping the party. The London streets were decked with holly and ivy, the shops were closed, the Mayor of London was verbally assaulted when he tried to rip down Christmas decorations with the help of soldiers. In Suffolk, young men armed with spiked clubs patrolled the streets, persuading the shopkeepers to stay shut. Fighting against the prohibition of Christmas was a political act. Things had changed, and the Christmas Rebellion was as much a protest against the new normal as it was against the banning of fun. People were fed up with a range of restrictions and financial difficulties that came with the Presbyterian system and the fallout of the Civil War. The aftermath of the Norwich Christmas riots was the most dramatic, the worst Christmas hangover ever. The mayor was summoned to London in April 1648 to explain his failure to prevent Christmas parties. But a crowd closed the city gates to prevent him from being taken away. Armed forces were deployed, and in the ensuing riots, the city's ammunition magazine exploded, killing 40 people. Norwich was not alone. In Kent, a grand jury decided Christmas party-going rioters had no choice but to answer the law and the country. Well, they went into exuberant rebellion against Parliament. Royalists capitalised on the popular discontent and began organising the rioters. Successfully, in 47 and 48, parties led to riots. Riots led to rebellion, which in turn caused the Second Civil War that summer. King Charles was put on trial after his defeat in the war and was executed. This resulted in a revolution, and Britain and Ireland became a republic, all because of Christmas. You might see now why the British are a bit reluctant to follow Angela Merkel's path to a strong lockdown over Christmas. It has to be said that the British have form when it comes to rebellion. Like in 1647, many people today are fed up with the government's restrictions. Many have suffered financial difficulties as a result of COVID regulations. Some may rail against the idea of ending a miserable year under what they may regard as contradictory restrictions on family fun. So the Brits will have to handle the situation gingerly. There's already been civil disorder over lockdowns. Vaccines are apparently coming in the new year, but the last thing the country needs is further unrest. Once again, the government will need to balance health risk against other societal challenges this pandemic has presented. Not surprisingly, in the current climate in the United States, where fake news competes with legitimate sources, this popped up on Facebook. Christmas was illegal in the United States until 1836, as it was considered an ancient pagan holiday. The post carried a photo of what purports to be a public notice stating that the observation of Christmas has been deemed a sacrilege. The claim is bogus, Stephen Nissenbaum, author of The Battle for Christmas, told the Associated Press, and the Associated Press affirmed it's false. The details of the post are incorrect. Though Christmas was not as widely celebrated in the early 1800s, it was not illegal throughout the country. However, one colony did make it illegal to celebrate Christmas in 1659. So let's go into the true history in the States. When they arrived in America, the first pilgrims continued to condemn Christmas. They were people who were not getting on with the rest of the Protestants in Europe, after all. And they defied the observation of Christmas holiday by spending the very first Christmas in 1620 building their first structure. Soon, however, discordant opinions about Christmas started to emerge. By the time of the second Christmas, that's 1621, Governor William Bradford started to lead the men to work as usual, but was met with resistance, as most of the new company excused themselves, saying it went against their conscience to work on Christmas Day. So that was always a good card to play if you're a Puritan, the conscience card. So the governor excused them from working. If it was truly a matter of conscience, he said, he would spare them till they were better informed. Bradford proceeded to work, but when he returned, he was angered to find the men playing sport openly in the streets. So he went to them and took away their implements and told them that it was against his conscience that they should play and others work. If they made keeping of it Christmas a matter of devotion, let them keep their houses, but there should be no gaming or revelling in the streets, since which time nothing hath been attempted that way, at least openly. In 1659, observation of Christmas, though forbearing of labour, feasting or any other way, was banned in Boston, and a 5-shilling fine was imposed on offenders, the law was difficult to enforce. And as more non-Puritan settlers arrived, tensions over Christmas continued to rise. The American ban was revoked in 1681 by an English-appointed governor. Anti-Christmas sentiment still held strong in Boston, and schools remained open on Christmas Day well into the mid-1800s. Puritan resistance to Christmas finally gave way in 1870, when it was declared a federal holiday. Of course, rather than just assume that everyone who doesn't like Christmas or aspects of Christmas is a Puritan or a wanker or a Scrooge or a Grinch or a miser, I think it's fair to concede that Christmas has a downside. The three D's: debt, drunkenness, domestic violence. You might like to add the three L's: landfill, loudness for the worst versions of the worst Christmas songs pumped out in cars and supermarkets, and lights. Of course, it's not wise to go around criticising other people's values or taste. Nor is it kind. But on the other hand, it's a little irresistible. Christmas is a great time for giving offence or for apprehending it. I recall being warned never to write Xmas when I was a child because the essential meaning was being expunged if you did not write the word Christ. I've since learned that in the Greek alphabet, X is the symbol for the letter chi, first letter in the Greek word for Christ. In the early days of the Christian church, Christians used Kai as a secret symbol to indicate their membership in the church to others. So Xmas was not originally a commercial secularisation of the Christmas celebration at all. I still don't write Xmas myself, but I hold my tongue when I see some heedless nephew writing Xmas. It's probably all Greek to him. Another little flashpoint of irritation is over greetings. Happy holidays is the greeting preferred by many young Aussies who don't go to church. And as they point out, there are at least 14 celebrations over our Christmas period. So it's not a war on Christmas, it's just being inclusive. People like to read stories, though, in the media or watch them about others offending or being offended. And every year at this time, there are stories about Muslims objecting to Christmas decorations and schools not allowing nativity plays. Now, I have personally never met a Muslim who was bothered in the least by Christmas. The ones I know wish me a happy Christmas and even a merry one, despite their personal abstinence from alcohol. And they don't bother saying happy holidays. They say Merry Christmas. My friend Gunhild, who was brought up in India, has never encountered a Christmas-hating Muslim either. Basically, it's an urban myth. Another urban myth is the ban on Christmas in state schools. Evangelical groups do get told no thank you, usually, when they apply to enter schools to do puppet play nativities or concerts that are absolutely fortified with a lot of moralising and theology. The odd hapless principal who said yes in a weak moment of religious pluralism lives to rue the day as parental complaints flood in, along with grumps from classroom teachers who've been bored, offended or both. Children like songs, concerts, decorations, presents, food sharing and storytelling. It all happens in state schools, but it's driven by the kids. I still treasure a table mat I was given by a Year 4 child. It told the story of the nativity in 12 frames, and the first one was, "You're pregnant!" Another really good frame was the donkey saying, "It's coming!" just before the birth. It's absolutely delightful. Now, but that all that aside, I find the most interesting issue that has arisen in 2020... is political. The concept of freedom. Nicht Freude, sondern Freiheit. Europe is dealing with its second wave of COVID-19 and governments seem powerless to stop the tide. Dutch political leaders find it difficult to convince their citizens to wear masks. Most French voters think that Emmanuel Macron's government has handled the pandemic badly and Boris Johnson is facing anger from all sides. According to these leaders, the arrival of a second wave has nothing to do with their own policy failures. It's got nothing to do with poor communication. No, the numbers are rising because Europeans are freedom-loving people and it's hard to make them follow rules. It's very difficult to ask the British population uniformly to obey guidelines in the way that is necessary, said Johnson. Similarly, in the Netherlands, some were quick to attribute soaring infection rates to the fact that the Dutch are famously averse to being patronised. The same explanation is often invoked to account for why Europe is doing significantly worse than countries in East Asia, where the disease seems to be more under control. According to some commentators, the authoritarian top-down political culture of countries like China and Singapore makes it far easier to implement strict measures than in liberal Europe. Singapore's effective crisis management, for instance, was supposedly made possible by the fact its government has always wielded absolute control over the state with an iron fist with a whip in it. Conversely, many believe that a devotion to individual liberty doomed the West to its ongoing crisis. But is this true? Is a poorly functioning government indeed the price we have to pay for freedom? If that is the case, then perhaps we'd better give up on liberty. After all, anyone who's dead or seriously ill does not benefit a great deal from being free. Fortunately, that's a conclusion we needn't draw. freedom is quite compatible with effective government. Western political thought from Herodotus to Algernon Sidney did not think a free society was a society without rules. In their view, freedom was a public good rather than a purely individual condition. A free people, Sidney said, lived under laws of their own making. John Locke is often portrayed as one who believed freedom coincided with individual rights, rights that should be protected at all costs against state interference. But Locke explicitly denied that freedom was harmed by government regulation, as long as those rules were made with the consent of society. He wrote, "Freedom, then, is not a liberty for everyone to do what he lists, to live as he pleases, and not to be tied by any law. But freedom of men under government is to have a standing rule to live by, common to everyone of that society, and made by the legislative power erected in it." It was only in the 19th century that some began to reject this collective ideal in favour of a more individualistic conception of liberty. In the wake of the French Revolution, democracy slowly expanded across Europe, but it was not universally welcomed. The extension of the right to vote, many feared, would give political power to the poor and uneducated, who would no doubt use it to make dumb decisions or to redistribute wealth. Hence, liberal elites embarked on a campaign against democracy, and they did so in the name of freedom. Democracy, liberal thinkers argued, was not the mainstay of liberty, but a potential threat to freedom properly understood. What's that? The private enjoyment of one's life and goods. Throughout the 19th century, this liberal, individualistic conception of freedom continued to be contested by radical Democrats and socialists alike. Suffragettes like Emmeline Pankhurst attacked the view that the best way to protect liberty was to limit government as much as possible. Politicians like Jean Jaurès said his socialists were the party of freedom, since their goal was to organise the sovereignty of all in both economic and political spheres. Only after 1945 did the liberal concept of freedom prevail over the older collective conception of freedom, and this was in the context of the Cold War. Rivalry between the free West and the Soviet Union, distrust of state power grew, even democratic state power. In 1958, liberal philosopher Isaiah Berlin, in a rather one-sided reading of history of European thought, stated that Western freedom was purely a negative concept. That is, every law, he stated bluntly, had to be seen as an encroachment on freedom. Well, the Cold War is long over. Now we're entering the third decade of the 21st century. We might want to dust off the older collective concept of freedom. If the coronavirus has made one thing clear, it is that collective threats, such as a pandemic, demand decisive, effective action from government. This does not mean giving up our freedom in exchange for the protection of a nanny state. As Sidney and Locke remind us, as long as even the strictest lockdown can count on broad democratic support, and the rules remain subject to scrutiny by our representatives and the press, they do not infringe our freedom. We've seen that scenario in real life, in real time, this year. No one in Australia has read a Declaration of Human Rights on being asked to wear a mask at the pharmacy. I think basically we get it here, and I'm profoundly grateful to live in a country in which caring for each other has not been conflated with caving into authority. As I lined up outside a small shop in Aldgate yesterday, I read this sign on the window. In the end, it will be impossible to know if we overreacted or did too much, but it will be quite apparent if we underreacted or did too little. Can you find your way home Christmas night? There is a star to guide you. It shines with the light I hold in my heart. Can you find a way home Christmas night? Can you find your way home Christmas day? There's so much I want to tell you, so much more to say. Oh, can you find your way home Christmas Day? We've been apart for so long now. This year has come and gone somehow, and suddenly the summer days are here bringing Christmas. Can you find your way home Christmas Eve? I had thought you would leave. Perhaps a star can guide you home this year, light the way and draw you near. How I wish you were here Christmas Eve. I need no gift beneath the Christmas tree this year. Christmas with you is all I truly need, my dear.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.